the headlines, Iran once again slams the IAEA chief's recent meeting with the Israeli prime minister, saying the meeting was in a wrong place at a wrong time and with a wrong person. Russian forces are now in control of the center of the city of Severodonetsk, the epicenter of the battle for Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. And the UK economy declines for a second month in a row, heightening fears that the country is heading for a recession. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran has defended its measures in response to the recent resolution against the country's nuclear program by the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Definitely, we couldn't let the political and non-technical measure of the agency go unanswered. Our actions have been decisive and proportionate. What Iran is doing now falls strictly under its nuclear safeguards obligations. What Iran has stopped doing is its voluntary measures. It is unfortunate if the IAEA's Director General would not know this or intentionally pose Iran's measures differently. Iran is entitled to end the commitments it undertook as a goodwill gesture when the other party violates a formerly agreed obligation. Therefore, Iran's measures create no proliferation worries.
The spokesman also said the IAEA resolution is driven by Israel and backed by its Western allies. Hatib Zadeh also slammed the IAEA chief for his recent meeting with the Israeli prime minister in Tel Aviv, saying it was a meeting in the wrong place at the wrong time and with the wrong person. He said the agency's director general has failed his duty to remain impartial and has been making comments against Iran beyond his technical capacity. The spokesman also dismissed the director general's comments that Iran's measures impede an agreement in the Vienna talks. He said the obstacle to the talks remained the U.S.'s refusal to fulfill its obligations under the 2015 agreement. Many on social media have appraised the 20-year cooperation agreement between Iran and Venezuela as an indication that the era of U.S. dominance is over now. Hashtag trending brings us a quick review of social media reactions to that story.
Hey everyone, welcome to another hashtag trending with me, Ali Raza. Venezuela and Iran are two friendly nations which managed to develop a strategic alliance over the past years in the face of crippling U.S. sanctions. And now the countries are further developing their ties. In an official visit to Tehran, the Venezuelan president signed a 20-year document with his Iranian counterpart on comprehensive strategic cooperation, which covers a wide range of petrochemical, oil, economic, tourism, political, and cultural fields. The strengthening of ties between Tehran and Caracas was welcomed on social media, with people praising the two countries for standing against Western sanctions and improving bilateral relations while the U.S. makes more enemies. Our first comment on Twitter comes from Peace B. Over the past several years, Iran and Venezuela have been the targets of a severe economic war launched by the West, and their bonds of cooperation proved integral to overcoming unilateral sanctions. Sentletse says on Twitter, Venezuela and Iran signed a 20-year cooperation agreement that covers agriculture, technology, oil, communications, tourism, and transportation. While the U.S. makes enemies, other countries are strengthening bilateral ties. Trucking Vulcan said, neither Venezuela nor Iran respects or fears the USA anymore. I bet if you ask Joe Biden why, he'll blame Putin. Venezuelan strongman Nicolas Maduro declares that the U.S.'s military dominance is over. Many blame the current economic crisis across the globe on the United States sanctions policy that targets the world's major oil producers, including Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. Some people are saying that the U.S. sanctions regime has negatively affected the U.S. and its economy more than those of the sanctioned countries. Let's move on to our next batch of comments. Ali Ujari said, U.S. naively believes the world can continue unaffected by its sanctioning Russian, Iranian, and Venezuelan oil. You want to see a real surge in oil prices? Just precipitate another crisis with Iran or Venezuela. Astro said the U.S. was counting on bribing Venezuela to lure it away from eastern anti-hegemonic countries through promises of easing blockade on the country. Iran and Venezuela today? Ha, ha, ha. Yajnadavam said U.S. sanctions policy should exempt oil for Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. A sanction that destroys your own economy more than it destroys the sanctioned country is pretty stupid, Joe Biden. Thak2K has our next tweet. The U.S. owns the world except for the few independent countries, Venezuela, Russia, China, Iran. It's getting harder for the CIA to keep countries in line. Now calls are growing on the U.S. to stop acting like a dictator and stop sanctioning countries in order to control them. Many people on social media believe that such measures serve no useful purpose other than creating hostility. Our final batch of comments starts with a tweet by Mario Pejic. The EU should not allow the U.S. to decide with which country the EU can trade. If the EU wants to buy Iran or Venezuela's oil, the EU has the right to buy it. Scott Stufflebeam said, tell me again how effective sanctions are. U.S. sanctions. Venezuela, 3 years since 2019, now ranked number one lowest gas price for 8 cents a gallon. Iran, 37 years, excluding 1981 to 1987, since 1979, now ranked number three lowest gas price for 20 cents a gallon. Syria, 36 years, since 1986, now ranked number four lowest gas price for $1.08 a gallon. Ram Gupta said that the U.S. should stop acting as dictator and not use sanctions to control other countries whenever it disagrees with them. The U.S. used sanctions to punish Cuba, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and recently Russia. It doesn't serve any useful purpose other than creating hostilities. And our final comment comes from Observer. If Iran and Venezuela can survive indefinite U.S. sanctions that made them willful and courageous, why other oil-producing countries, especially the Arabs, cannot follow suit by abandoning their inbuilt jealousies and fears of the U.S.? It will make them strong and an international force to reckon with. Well, that's it for another Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
Moving on, Russia says it has destroyed a large cache of weapons and military equipment, including some delivered by the U.S. and Europe to Ukraine and the eastern Donetsk region.
High-precision air-launched missiles destroyed in the area of Yudeshny railway station in the Donetsk People's Republic, a large number of weapons and military equipment delivered for Ukrainian nationalist groups, including from the United States and European countries.
A Russian official said a temporary deployment point of foreign mercenaries was also destroyed in the Lugansk region. Two batteries of multiple launch rocket systems in Lugansk and Kharkiv were hit as well. This as Russian and Ukrainian forces remain locked in a fierce battle in the city of Severodonetsk. Russian forces are now in control of the center of the city. Local Ukrainian authorities say Russian forces have destroyed a bridge connecting Severodonetsk to the city of Lychansk, another battleground still under Ukraine's control of Lugansk. Meanwhile, three civilians, including a child, were killed and four others injured by Ukrainian artillery fire at a market in a Russian-speaking area of Donetsk. Local media say NATO standard munitions were used in these attacks. Our correspondent Johnny Miller is following the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war, which has now been concentrated in Ukraine's eastern region. Earlier, he gave us an update on the situation there and how the international community is responding to it.
It looked like they've taken Severodonetsk, but the battle for Donbass looks like it'll continue to be long and hard. Russia is being accused of war crimes in Kharkiv at the moment, and the Ukrainian army has just been shelling where I am now, the center of town. I just went outside to find my neighbors sheltering in the corridor. So the war continues very much here. There is some calls, increasing signs that some people, some countries, at least behind the scenes, are calling for peaceful negotiation. Indeed, the NATO head, Jens Stoltenberg, talked yesterday, suggesting that this war will have to go to the negotiating table at some point. But at the moment, that does still seem a long way off. And it looks like one side or the other is going to have to make a major breakthrough on the front lines for any side to start thinking about negotiations.
The UK economy has suffered its first back-to-back slump since the COVID outbreak, heightening fears that the country is heading for a recession. According to the Office for National Statistics, gross domestic product fell by bigger than expected, 0.3% in April. The economy had also registered a drop of 0.1% in March. Output in services, production, and construction sectors fell. That is the first time all main sectors have shrunk in over a year. Prices are rising in their fastest rate in 30 years, driven by record high fuel and energy costs. The Bank of England has warned the UK faces a sharp economic slowdown and an inflation of over 10% by the end of the year. Author and activist Fra Hughes says the economic hardships Western countries are currently going through is self-inflicted.
Well, absolutely. Anthony alluded that it's a political choice. It's nothing to do with a world recession caused by financial kind of misregulations by the banks that we had in 2007, 2008, 2009. This is a political choice by first world countries, by the whole of Western Europe and the NATO-aligned American countries. This is very much self-inflicted. But the problem is, I think no matter what the people do, even if people come out onto the streets, demand a change in the political direction of the government, that won't happen. We all know what needs to happen is the sanctions need to be lifted. Ukraine and Russia must come to a ceasefire and an agreed way forward about the future and neutrality of Ukraine, and allow the world really to recover from the COVID pandemic, which we're really just beginning to emerge from. But the reality of what should be done, what must be done, and what will be done are completely separate, because the people who run the government, many of them are billionaires, they care nothing for ordinary people, and they care nothing for the troubles that people will find themselves in, the difficulties that people will find themselves in. So what should be done and what will be done, there is a huge gulf between those two things.
The Indian government has demolished homes of several people for their alleged involvement in violent protests over the blasphemous comments against Prophet Muhammad. A young Muslim girl denounces the demolition of her home in the state of Uttar Pradesh as an act of vendetta. Afarin Fatima calls the demolition illegal and part of the right-wing Hindu nationalist government's policies against Muslims. She has also rejected the allegations that her father was a mastermind of the protests. Authorities also destroyed two other homes in the Uttar Pradesh at the weekend. The demolitions came after days of protests against Islamophobic remarks by two members of the ruling party, Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Some demolitions turned deadly after police opened fire on stone-throwing protesters and arrested hundreds of them. The sacrilege also triggered a diplomatic backlash against New Delhi. Muslims have long complained of rampant Islamophobia in India, saying that they face systematic abuse and hate crimes. Authorities have recently embarked on demolishing Muslim homes, a move legal experts call against the Constitution. The U.S. is entangled in the Ukraine conflict, is also pursuing another confrontational approach on the other side of the world, namely with China. The U.S. has been accused by Beijing of creating instability in China's backyard, an accusation that the U.S. has leveled against China, both military and nature.
G20
China and the U.S. are locked in a growing war of words over the self-ruled island of Taiwan, which Beijing considers as part of its territory. But now, amid simmering tensions between the superpowers, at the Shangri-La Dialogue Security Summit in Singapore, Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin accused the Chinese military of provocative and destabilizing activities near Taiwan. During the same event, the Chinese defense minister hit back at the U.S., saying Beijing had no choice but to fight if attempts are made to separate Taiwan from China.
If anyone dares to see Taiwan from China, we will not hesitate to fight. We will fight at all costs, and we definitely will fight to the very end. This is the only choice for China.
I think it was very clear the exchange that General Wei had with Secretary Austin was quite straightforward as far as we understand. And his speech was also, of course, very sharp in terms of outlining what the Chinese were prepared to do if Taiwan would declare for independence. Now, both of these people laid out their positions on this. But the question is still very unclear how far the United States is willing to go in trying to use Taiwan in their attempt to bring together the countries of Asia as a counter to China.
But China also struck a more pacifying tone, calling for a stable China-U.S. relationship. Wei stated that the China-U.S. relation is at a critical and crucial juncture. He added that Beijing believes a stable Sino-U.S. relation serves the interests of both countries and the rest of the world. The Chinese defense minister also noted that China had achieved impressive progress in the field of nuclear weapons. Wei, however, noted that Beijing will only use them for defending the nation, never starting a nuclear war, nor ever use nuclear weapons first. He pointed out that the ultimate purpose of China's nuclear arsenal is to prevent a nuclear war.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Climatenomics by former White House reporter and director of environmental entrepreneurs Bob Keefe is a narrative account of how the climate crisis is fundamentally altering not just the US but global economics. We are prepared for you an article written by Edward Helmore. The piece is titled New Book Says Climate Crisis is Battering U.S. Economy and Driving Inflation. according to a new book, Forget Ukraine, Coronavirus, Corporate Greed and Supply Chain Issues. When it comes to inflation, the climate crisis is the real lasting worry, and one that's only likely to get worse. Climatenomics, by former White House reporter and director of environmental entrepreneurs Bob Keefe, is a narrative account of how the climate crisis is fundamentally altering not just the US, but global economics. Within its pages, Bob Keefe lays out what he sees as the false choice between creating jobs and driving economic growth and protecting the planet, and how supply chain disruptions has become a euphemism for the effects of climate change. Keefe says, "I don't think people have realized that climate change is an economic issue now, because it's always been seen as an environmental, health or social issue." He added, "The fact of the matter is climate change is battering our economy." Political and monetary policy leaders hinted as much recently after the US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen acknowledged that inflation had reached unacceptable highs. It hit a 40-year high of 8.6% in the year to the end of May. 2 days later, the White House said, "Our hemisphere is facing the devastating impacts and costs of climate change," ahead of Joe Biden's Summit of the Americas in the city of Los Angeles. Assessing the role of climate change on economies is one thing, but for now, most models merely assess the cost of climate-related disasters, not their underlying effect on inflation. According to Bob Keefe, citing National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration figures, climate-related weather disasters cost the U.S. economy more than $145 billion in 2021, a nearly 50% increase from last year. Over the last 5 years, they have cost $750 billion. Since 1980, 323 weather and climate disasters have cost $1 billion or more, the total cost of these events exceeding $2.195 trillion. Moreover, according to a report from the reinsurance firm Swiss Re last year, climate disasters could cost the American economy 10% of gross domestic product, or GDP, the broadest measure of economic health, by 2050. Globally, that figure rises to 18%. A 2018 National Climate Assessment projects that rising temperatures and extreme heat are projected to decrease worker productivity by $221 billion a year by 2090. And climate-related weather disasters are projected to cost the U.S. $500 billion a year. Another study published in Environmental Research Letters in July of last year found long-term warning contributed $27 billion to the losses covered by the U.S. crop insurance program from 1991 to 2017, or just over 19% of the total. In 2012, the single costliest year, rising temperatures contributed nearly half of losses valued at $18.6 billion. While each of those relate to gross domestic product and productivity, none specifically refer to inflation and inflationary pressure, prices rising over time, and are not factored into official government statistics related by the Bureau of Labor's Consumer Price Index, the CPI, which measures the changing prices of a basket of goods and services. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell have faced criticism for initially describing inflation as a transitory problem that would resolve itself. Janet Yellen has admitted that her initial evaluation of the economy was wrong and that she and Jerome Powell could have used a better term than transitory. She said that the bulk of inflation was related to imbalances in supply and demand. but that too has climate component, says David Supper, a professor of law and economics at Georgetown University, who argues that climate change is largely ignored as an inflationary driver, in part because it is manifesting as a global problem in overt and covert ways that makes the direct inflationary impact hard to assess. David Supper says its impact is broad and systemic, so there is no one item in the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, that you can say reflects climate change. We can say that grain and gas oil costs reflect the Ukraine war, but you can't do that with climate change because it affects so many things. Loss of timber and homes due to wildfires in the western United States might show up in housing construction costs, or the cost of retrofitting homes to guard against coastal erosion and flooding. David Supper points out, right there you have several things that are either increasing demand or undermining supply, and that's just one small part of it. Similarly, supply chain issues frequently cited as inflationary may not simply be issues around China COVID lockdowns affecting manufacturing, but a range of issues from roads washing out or loss of crops due to extreme weather events and shifting weather patterns. The Consumer Price Index, the CPI, is focused on results and not causes. The responsibility to assess causes rests with the White House Council of Economic Advisers, or National Economic Council. Bodies that have attempted to come out with estimates that have been met with challenges to their data by climate deniers, resulting in paralysis. David Supper says that has led to less eagerness to do estimations in areas where a lot of estimates would have to be made because there's so little inclination to assume those estimates would be done in good faith. He added, in the face of a well-funded climate denier industry, the estimates get turned into a sideshow. Shifting the climate crisis from an environmental to an economic issue is at the heart of what climatonomics presents. Bob Keefe says what's required is an effort similar in scale to the shift from the industrial to the information age to renewable energy, and with it, provisions to counter climate change's increasing disruption. Bob Keefe says, what we do know is that the economic cost of climate change, both from weather disasters and commodities costs, is taking an increasing toll on economies. But if one of the major inflationary forces is climate, it's also one that can't be tackled simply by central bankers adjusting interest rates. According to David Supper, seeing climate change as an environmental issue, which it is, but not as an economic issue, which it surely is as well, is now in the process of changing. David Supper says the current round of inflation has widened people's eyes to it. Sure, the pandemic and the war in Ukraine are part of it, but I think this is a teachable moment that will allow people to see just how pervasive climate change is in affecting the way we live. We have framed the climate concern in extremely narrow ways, never a good idea with a complex social phenomena or with something as all-encompassing as this.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in this chapter of At-Taghabun, has messages for us that we need to look at. Verse 11 says, مَا أَصَابَ مِن مُصِيبَةٍ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِ اللَّهِ. And then after stating this fact, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَمَن يُؤْمِن بِاللَّهِ يَهْدِ قَلْبَ. And whoever believes in Allah, He will guide their heart. Whoever believes in Allah, God will guide their hearts. Now, if you want to guide someone, you need to know things. Well, God knows everything. Everything. So He's the one that can provide guidance. No one else knows everything. Everyone else is jahil. Unless God gives them, like the Prophet, like the Ahlul Bayt, and whoever else, as He said, مَن يُؤْمِن بِاللَّهِ يَهْدِ قَلْبَ. When He gives that guidance to the heart of the believer, then that believer will know. But on their own, no. Allah will guide them. Allah's Surah Al-Dhuha, which we read, says, وَوَجَدَكَ ضَالًا فَهَدَى. This doesn't mean that at a time the Prophet, God forbid for me saying this, this isn't intended. Some people have misunderstood it, saying that it means that there was a time that the Prophet was not guided. God found him misguided, lost, or using the wording of the verse, and did He not find you lost and He guided you? And so they understand it in this way, wrongly. This is a wrong understanding. That at age 40, perhaps, or a little before that, whenever there's a time that the Prophet is found to be lost, he's not guided. What does that mean? He's misguided, he's lost, he doesn't believe in God, he doesn't know. He hasn't been provided with guidance, he's lost. Then guidance came. This is a very, very wrong understanding, and it's because the verses of the Quran have not been thought over and reflected upon thoroughly enough. Firstly, that is not the only thing that this could mean. And secondly, besides the verses of the Quran that can be provided, if the Prophet was just like everybody else is lost, he's lost as well. So what was the point of choosing this particular person out of all the lost people of the world? Just eeny, meeny, miny, mo, just, oh, it doesn't matter, just somebody. Well, if it's just somebody, why didn't he take Abu Sufyan? Why wasn't Abu Sufyan? No. What the Prophet ﷺ has said, what the Quran tells us about who the Prophet was as a person. No. And then that verse, that's not the only way of interpreting it. If it was the only way of understanding it, then we would have to accept it in that way or think, oh, is that even the Quran? Is it not? Should we even believe in the Quran? Because it wouldn't make sense. We'd have those other problems. But no, that's وَوَجَدَكَ ضَالًا. He found you in and of himself, the Prophet in and of himself. Right here, the Quran regarding a mu'min. Is a mu'min guided? No, يَهْدِ قَلْبَ. God guides him. Now, when God guides him, is that guidance the mu'min's guidance or is it God's guidance? Is that mu'min in and out after the guidance is given? When even the Prophet, when the Prophet is guided at a time, at any point in time that you see him to be guided, right? So those who have that wrong understanding, let's say when the Prophet became a Prophet at age 40, now is he guided or not? They must say, well, of course, yeah, fahada. Okay. So when that hada happens, when God guides, again, the Prophet, in and of himself, does he know on his own, or is it God giving him guidance? It's God giving him guidance. And at that very point that he is guided, he's guided by Allah, not himself. Therefore, he, in and of himself, is the dhal. Everyone is like that. Everyone, in and of themselves, they're dhalim. Allah's God, this is from the Quran. Prophet Yusuf said, وَمَا أُبَرِّئُ نَفْسِي إِنَّ النَّفْسَ لَأَمَّارَةٌ بِالسُّءِ إِلَّا مَا رَحِمَ رَبِّي. This nafs will guide, will push towards, will command to evil to wrong, amara bisu, bad things, illa ma rahima rabbi. So when it commands me to do good things, that's ma rahima rabbi. That prophet of God, Yusuf, is he guided or not? He is. He says, ma ubarri'u nafsi, this nafs, no, it goes in and of myself, I'll be going the other way. It's God's mercy, God's guidance. So this is called looking at, they call it taqaddum rutbi, or taqaddum and ta'akhur rutbi, the difference between that moment where it says, wajadaka dhal, being misled, and being guided, the taqaddum and ta'akhur, the precedence, something happening prior to the other, it's one state, then the other, that is not separated by time. And therefore, it isn't such that at a time he was dhal, at another time he was guided. It's rutbi. It's in the rank, if that's the right equivalent. Another way of putting it is, it's looking at it from a hierarchical perspective. In terms of he himself, no, not time-wise, that before and after. No, he himself, there's no guidance. God providing guidance at that level, then when God's guidance comes, not time-wise, it's called rutbi. Anyhow, the point we were mentioning, I had to explain that because sometimes there's confusions that come about and we need to explain every now and then. That verse says, with regards to the Prophet, وَوَجَدَكَ ظَالًا فَهَذَا, guidance comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. مَنْ يُؤْمِن بِاللَّهِ يَهْدِ قَلْبَهُ وَاللَّهُ بِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ عَلِيمٌ. We need that guidance. If you believe, if you accept that guidance from Allah, Allah will provide you guidance. Where? يَهْدِ قَلْبَهُ, in your heart, you will be guided. This doesn't say God will give you the Quran. The Quran is already there. But does your Quran, does your heart receive the light of the Quran? مَنْ يُؤْمِن بِاللَّهِ يَهْدِ قَلْبَهِ. Believe in Him, then your heart will be guided. God will guide it perhaps through the Quran at times directly. You read the verses of the Quran and you get that. Sometimes it's the word of the Ahlul Bayt, Salamullah alayhim ajma'in. Superficially, otherwise there's different things in the unseen and the ghaib of this world that we don't want to get into for now. مَنْ يُؤْمِن بِاللَّهِ يَهْدِ قَلْبَهِ. Your heart will be guided. You'll see the right path. You'll choose the right path because it's clear.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mateen Ghafur Shakur Wadud Qayyim. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A Guardian analysis has uncovered how American companies enrich themselves and their investors while boasting about jacking up prices. We now present you an article written by Tom Perkins under the heading Revealed: Top U.S. Corporations Raising Prices on Americans Even as Profits Surge. As inflation shot to a new peak in March, cost increases exacted a deep toll on the economy, eating into most Americans' wages and further imperiling the financially vulnerable. But for many of US's largest companies and their shareholders, it has been a very different story. One widely accepted narrative holds that companies and consumers are sharing in inflationary pain. But a Guardian analysis of top corporations' financials and earnings calls reveals most are enjoying profit increases even as they pass on costs to their customers, many of whom are struggling to afford gas, food, clothing, housing, and other basics. The analysis of Securities and Exchange Commission filings for 100 U.S. corporations found net profits up by a median of 49%, and in some individual cases by as much as 111,000%. Those increases came as companies lumbered customers with higher prices and all but 10 executed massive stock buyback programs or bumped dividends to enrich investors. In earnings calls, executives detailed how even as demand and profits rose post-vaccine, they passed on most or all of inflationary costs to customers via price increases, and some took the opportunity to add more on top. Margins, the share of sales converted into profits, also improved for the majority of the companies analyzed by The Guardian. Economists who reviewed the data say it's more evidence of a clear reality. Consumers are taking a financial hit as companies and shareholders profit or are largely shielded. Krista Brown, a policy analyst with the American Economic Liberties Project, said, "It's obvious that corporations are trying to pass on any form of short-term pain they might be feeling, and that serving the top, wealthiest class instead of those in need of fair wages or products that are affordable." Media framing likely influences public perception. News reports of Hershey's multiple price hikes over the last year read like so many dire reports on inflation's pervasive toll. The company, which owns popular brands like Reese's Kit Kat and Skinny Pop, has been cast as the latest victim of ever-increasing inflation. But a closer look at the company's financials suggests a vastly different reality. Hershey's net profits spiked 62% between the fourth quarter in 2019 and 2021. Its operating margin widened, and it recently rewarded shareholders with $200 million in stock buybacks. The chief executive officer, Michelle Buck, told investors, Still, customers will pay even more for candy shops in 2022 as Hershey aims for even higher profits. Pricing will be an important lever for us this year and is expected to drive most of our growth. Similarly, a Kroger executive told investors in June, "A little bit of inflation is always good for our business," while Hostess's chief executive officer in March said rising prices across the economy helps its profit. Lindsay Owens, executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, which tracks companies' profits, said, "The pandemic, war, supply chain bottlenecks, and pricing decisions made in corporate suits have created a smokescreen." She added that obscures questionable price increases and allows businesses to be portrayed as victims of inflation. Lindsay Owens said, "That grey, nebulous area is fertile ground for companies right now, and you hear about it in their earnings calls. Inflation itself is the opportunity." The Guardian's findings are in line with recent US Commerce Department data that shows corporate profit margins rose 35% during the last year and are at their highest level since 1950. Meanwhile, inflation rose to 8.5% year over year in March. The Guardian's analysis is the first to take a granular look at a cross-section of companies across a range of industries in the United States. It compared the most recent quarter's profits to the same quarter 2 years ago, pre-pandemic. Price increases were obtained by checking earnings reports, though those often lacked specifics. The data is not intended to be definitive, but does show how a wide sample of companies have raised prices even as profits jumped. After earnings call, executives made no secret of their strategies. As gas prices soared, Chevron's 240% profit spike was part of the best two quarters the company has ever seen, prompting a dividend increase and assurances it would keep production low to maintain high prices. Steel Dynamics profits increased by 809%. The company was not materially affected by inflation as higher prices exceeded increased supply chain costs. Fertilizer giant Nutrien's profits shot up by about $1.2 billion on higher selling prices that more than offset higher raw material costs and lower sales volume. Nike's 53% profit increase, driven by higher prices, was only partially offset by supply chain and inflationary cost increases. The analysis found commodity companies trading in oil, timber, rubber, meat, wheat, steel, and mining recorded the highest profit increases, while restaurants and retailers saw comparatively lower improvements or losses. Martin Schmalz, an Oxford University economist, noted commodity price spikes reverberate down the supply chain, eventually hitting the consumer. He added, "The Guardian's data objectively shows a massive transfer of wealth from consumers who pay higher prices to shareholders and investment firms that reap the benefits." Even as profits skyrocket, many have dismissed the idea they play a meaningful role in inflation, including Larry Summers, a former Obama advisor with clout in the Biden White House. He previously called profiteering claims business bashing that are terrible economics. A Hershey spokesperson stressed that its growth was driven in part by volume, and it would be reinvesting much of its profits to meet growing demand. He said, "These investments are where we are making the biggest use of cash." Financial observers have varying takes on whether companies are profiteering or price gouging or simply profiting. George Parks, an analyst at Bespoke Investment, pointed to Caterpillar, which recorded a 958% profit increase driven by volume growth and price realization between 2019 and 2021's fourth quarter. Eliminating price increases may have dropped the company's 2021 quarter four operating profits slightly below the $1.3 billion it made in 2020. George Park said, "This isn't price gouging, and it shows pretty concretely that there's a lot of nuance there." Adding, "Profiteering is not the primary driver of inflation, nor the primary driver of corporate profits." However, he added that it's reasonable to question whether Caterpillar should have passed on its cost increases to its customers. Brown noted the company also spent $5 billion on buybacks last year, and $1.3 billion for a quarter of profits is still high, especially in the context of American workers' shrinking wages. She said companies have access to massive capital. They could have one or two years that are more painful, not even more painful, just less profitable for their investors, and they're choosing not to.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei elaborates on six key points of Imam Khomeini's testament. June 4, 2018. If you travel to different Muslim countries, you will notice that their people have a high opinion of your beliefs, motives, and aspirations, regardless of their governments. They admire our slogans against oppression, the snake-like Zionist network and hegemony. They admire the chants that we have shouted in support of the oppressed and the Palestinian nation. This is what Muslim nations think. Their behavior is indicative of the spread of an Islamic revolution. As you can see, even our nation's views regarding nuclear energy, the fact that the Iranian nation resisted the pressure of the enemies and asked for its right have been reflected in the Islamic world in a way that resulted in Muslim and Arab countries declaring the nuclear energy has turned into a public sense of urgency for all Arab countries. Both the friends and foes of the Iranian nation admit that the prophecy of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi regarding the spread of the revolution has been realized today, an instance of which is the Palestinian issue. Like the Iranian nation, all nations are sympathetic towards the Palestinian nation.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Like the Iranian nation, all nations consider the Israeli regime as an illegitimate and imposed power on the region. Of course, many governments are not supportive of their nations. That idleness is exactly the element that strengthens Israel. The Zionist regime has no internal power to stand on its own feet. Today, there are two factors that have helped the Zionist regime to resist. One is the unconditional and shameless support of the U.S. for this degenerate regime. And the other is the lack of support for the Palestinian people on the part of the Arab and Muslim governments. Unfortunately, most of the Muslim governments do not carry out their responsibilities in favor of Palestine as they should, and they are not harmonious with their people. The third prominent point, which is important to our nation and youth, in Imam Khomeini's testament and in the statements that he made during the last 10 years of his blessed life, is that the Islamic Revolution helps our nation progress.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.